My name is Suzanne Ellis Vernevy. I am 41 years old. Today is September 8th, 2018, and I am speaking with Nell Burlingham, who is my aunt. We are recording this interview in New York City. Okay, I'm starting with a really big, important life question, which is, how did you get into astrology?
I was a student at Kirkland Hamilton.
Okay.
And a friend of mine who went to Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
Tom,
mm-hmm.
Was a little quirky mm-hmm. of a type of guy. And he had a bust of Beethoven on his in his room.
Mm.
And he was an astrologer. He studied astrology.
Mm.
And so he and I had mutual friends, and we would talk about them. And he would always say things like, well, she has a misplaced Mercury, and that's why she talks all the time. Or, you know, fascinating little tidbits. So I decided to learn as much from him as I could.
Mm.
And then we began to discuss our friends in terms of their archetypes or their charts,
mm-hmm.
you know, that were astrologically based.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning.
So you learned to read the charts on your own?
I learned to read them in a very basic way. There's a lot about reading charts that I still don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. I learned the basic aspects of the planets and the basic meaning of each of the planets, the basic meaning of all of each of the signs, and I learned the fact that the chart is a picture of the sky at the moment you're born and the place that you're born. But I didn't learn, and I learned some very interesting things which I wanted to expand later in life, which something called the moon's north nodes and the moon's south nodes, which are calculated, not real planet. It's a calculation that's done on everybody's chart.
Hmm.
Supposedly, the south node represents what you've done in past lives.
Okay.
And that you've perfected in past lives, but you're not called upon to do it, really, in this life, even though you keep doing it because you can't kind of get away from it.
Hmm.
But the north node points to what your real purpose is in this life. And that fascinated me, karmically.
So is that something that you get from a chart? Like that what you're, and what is yours?
What is mine? My north node is at what's called the nadir of the chart, which is the bottom of the chart.
Okay.
And it's in Capricorn.
Hmm.
And it is sort of in the between the third and fourth house.
Mm-hmm.
So the third house represents communication, writing, brothers and sisters, and the fourth house is the house of the mother. So so an astrologer, for example, asked me if I had children.
Mm.
And when I said, no, I don't, he was very, very surprised because of the placement of the north nodes.
Hmm.
But then he said, oh, you're like Oprah. You have hundreds
many
of
children. Yeah.
And you're, you know, sort of the caregiver position.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And is it a practice that you have, like, kept as part of your daily life from the age of 20 or
there was a dropout when I went to medical school
and science took over.
Yeah, science took over for years. And
yeah.
So it's really only recently that I've gotten back interested in it in the last couple of years.
And you do do that on a daily basis or
I
weekly?
Don't.
No. But you look.
I can look at people's charts if I know because I have a program that will do computer programming. Generate the chart and then I can look at it, but I'm not an experienced astrologer, so I can only get the basics.
Because part of what interests me about that is that you have an interest in astrology and also in science. And how do those two things relate or not relate in your mind?
Well, I think there is lots we don't know about. Life is a mystery. being human in the body is a mystery. Science hasn't discovered everything. Most of the universe is black matter. What is it? Dark matter. And nobody knows what it is,
right,
even in this day and age. So I don't propose that astrology is always true, but I do propose that it can give you some interesting looks at people's personalities, and what are the forces kind of moving them. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But, and science, you know, it's not a scientific, I think astrologers might disagree with me, but I would say it's not science in the sense that we know it every day.
So for you, they don't conflict. It's just a complement, a different way of understanding.
And also, it's a cycle. It's a, in terms of psychology, it's a tool in which you can look at the archetypes of different signs, and you can see people's personality, or you can use it as a way to speak about the personality type.
So one thing I never understood about astrology versus like reading your tarots or reading your palm is it more just like a reflection of where you are right now versus a prediction of the future?
No, the natal chart, which you do first, is sort of lays out what your basic personality might be.
Okay.
And then you do something called transits as you go through life to see where, as the heavens themselves change and the large planets change in relation to your natal chart, that it can tell you when you're going to be faced with certain types of challenges or dilemmas. So, for example, the weekend leading up to when I had the diagnosis of the brain tumor, I had... there's an astrologer that I follow, Stephen Forrest, and he put out a podcast about something that was going to be going on. And for some reason, I listened to it two or three times. And basically what he said was, this weekend, or you know, actually July 4th, if you have a chart in which Uranus impacts... the position of Uranus impacts your chart, and it's going to, it's very likely that you may have something that is physically going to affect you, and it's probably going to have to do with your head, because this planet, the Uranus is in Aries, which governs the head. And I kept being fascinated by this because I kept listening. I went back and listened. I don't usually do that. And I thought, I looked at it in terms of my own chart, and I realized that, in fact, it impacted my chart very directly. And then the next day, I had this splitting headache, which was the bleed from the tumor. And I couldn't hold anything down and went to the ER, and the rest is, you know. So it was sort of, I had an inkling. I wasn't, I wasn't extremely surprised.
You were not extremely surprised?
Not really, no. Given what he had said in the podcast, it made perfect sense.
And so when a doctor told you that what your situation was, which I guess it kind of came in bits. Were you thinking about that? Like
simultaneously, but reflecting on it.
Reflecting on it,
Interesting.
Interesting. And is it something like when you have a new patient, would you like look up their...
Usually not.
Yeah.
Usually it's after I know someone for a long time that I would... look it up. If they if they're open to it. Not always people aren't always.
Interesting. That's sort of a related question I asked. So how and why did you decide to become a doctor?
It became clear that the jobs that I was having in my 20s mm-hmm. were mostly office work.
Okay.
And at Columbia University. Mm-hmm. And there would be these professors coming in and out, mm-hmm. and they were all working on grants. And I had this sense, you know, they're really not that much smarter than me or that mm-hmm. much better than mm-hmm. me. And so I decided I really wanted to do something with my life mm-hmm. that, and I didn't think I was going to have children. So mm-hmm. I wanted to embark on some significant venture that would lead me to a more meaningful work life.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought it was going to be Chinese medicine and acupuncture and herbal medicine.
Okay.
So I signed up for a school of acupuncture in New York, and one of the things that it required was taking anatomy and physiology mm-hmm. over the summer. So I did that, and then I took other courses there. But I remember distinctly there was someone in my anatomy physiology class who said, you know, you really have to become a doctor because you really, it's like you take to this so naturally. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, that's a way long way to go,
you know,
years and years.
Yeah. So but how old were you at that point?
I was 33 probably.
Okay.
And in order to do it, I had to go back to school and take physics and chemistry, mm-hmm. Which I had never taken, mm-hmm. and calculus, which mm-hmm. I had never taken.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do that at Columbia. They gave tuition exemption for employees.
Okay.
So I took those classes. I decided if I'm going to do this and see people and pass on their state of health, I want to know the maximum about what's going on with mm-hmm. them in their
mm-hmm.
body
mm-hmm.
and in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing acupuncture or Chinese mm-hmm. medicine mm-hmm. wouldn't give me a peace of mind that I was giving them an mm-hmm. honest opinion, taking into consideration mm-hmm. all the factors.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally came around to the idea that the only way to do that and to know the maximum that science knows about the body is to go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it happened, and I entered Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx in August of, I was 37 going on
mm-hmm.
38,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And were you among the oldest in your class, or?
There were two older than me.
Uh-huh.
There were two people older than me.
And had they also had totally different...
Totally different
careers
lives.
Before.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you know going in that you had an interest in psychiatry, or
didn't know?
Did not know.
Did not know. Did not know until I rotated on psychiatry
mm-hmm.
in my third year that this was where I belonged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about it?
It was the only. It felt like the only discipline that looked at the whole person.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't just look at the symptom mm-hmm. or the joint or the limb or the organ that was troubling the person.
Mm-hmm.
It looked at their psyche, their life circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
They added that in
mm-hmm.
to whatever physically was troubling
mm-hmm.
the person.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed a much more universal approach, and it really appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that was also like a longer, like it's one of the longest,
it's
right?
Very long.
So
yeah.
It was a major
yeah.
commitment. You knew that it was something you really wanted to do.
Yeah,
yeah.
I knew.
Yeah.
But I knew that it would involve, after the 4 years of medical school, it would involve 4 years of residency
mm-hmm.
unless I decided to specialize in something,
mm-hmm.
which I did decide mm-hmm. to specialize in child and adolescent.
Okay.
So it ended up being 5 years
okay.
after
medical and have school. Your... For some reason, I always picture your patients being adult, but were they have?
It's a lot of them are adults.
A lot of them
now,
are adults,
and
okay.
I have some children too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
So I asked you that. So you partially answered, but in my historical knowledge of the life of Nell Burlingham, I know a little bit about childhood, and then.
Mm-hmm.
This post era
mm-hmm.
in which I've been a conscious adult. But what were you, what was going on in between? So what were you doing before you became a doctor?
Right. I worked, as I say, at Columbia.
Yeah.
That was really my first significant job.
Yeah.
as a, it was in the Center for the Social Sciences, mm-hmm. and I produced the newsletter and some mm-hmm. official mm-hmm. publications. Mm-hmm. And I learned, that was where I learned how to use computers. At that time, the computers were, I remember everyone was very excited that the IBM 4341 came in, and they started using this term virtual computing. Mm-hmm. And I remember nobody really got it, grokked the term of virtual computing. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the word processor that we used was something called Wilbur. Which
I
was a
Wilbur, vaguely. I think it was something in school.
Really, yeah. Yeah. And so it was really an essential stop on my way because now I'm very comfortable with computers. Mm-hmm.
But somewhere in there, my grandmother / your mother ran for Congress.
That's true. Yes.
And am I correct that you were like the campaign manager?
Yes. Yes. I was one of them. There were others helping her. I was a campaign helper, let's put it that way.
So I don't know very much about this other than that it happened. So like how did that all come about? Like how did she decide to run for Congress?
You know, she had been active since my birth or before in something called Rockland County Conservation Association.
Okay.
And she was always a very strong environmentalist. But given my father's, her husband's, my father's illness, she was always 75% of her life had to go to helping him and making sure that his life was smooth because of his, he was paralyzed on his left. From when he had the stroke at the age of 48 until his death when he was 70. Mm. So she was free to go to meetings and
right, okay, so
be sort of...
He died around like, what, 1980, something like that, right? So I think I was three.
He was 70 and he was born in 1909, so it would have been... 79. Thank you, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1979. And it, after that, she was in a sort of period of mourning for a couple of years, but was able then, she had the freedom to get much more deeply involved in politics and the environment and various committees in Rockland County that she, remember, one of her committees was the Solid Waste Committee.
Okay.
And we would always joke with her about it. But it turns out solid waste is a huge factor now. You know, she was right in on the on the ground floor.
Right. And actually, I mean, just thinking like our earlier conversation about the environment, I mean, the sort of crisis situation that we're in right now was maybe not as present or as conscious for most people. So what do you think was driving her interest in environmentalism?
I remember... one summer at Fire Island, I must have been about 13 or 14. So it was in the 60s. And she was reading Rachel Carson's Silent Spring.
Okay.
And I think this was not the beginning of her interest, because I know that she'd been involved in the Conservation Association since my birth or before. But I think that was one of the factors along the way. Are you also asking about why she ran for Congress?
I am also, I am interested in that. So, why did she run for Congress?
Well, it was quixotic.
Yeah.
Because the incumbent congressman was pretty much unbeatable.
Yeah.
And he was a Republican and didn't stand for any of the things she understood, she stood for, sorry. And his name was Ben Gilman. And... yet we figured out a way for her to win the primary. See, this is what the women now have figured out, the progressive women, that you can win a primary because if you do enough agitating before the primary and get your word out, you're gonna force a subset of voters to go who really want, you know, progressive politics, let's say. So that's what happened, and she had in she ran twice for Congress, and the first time, both times she won the primary, but and both times she had, people opposing her who were young men who had were known in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here she was 72 mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. like that, or older.
Mm-hmm.
75 maybe. And somehow, by perhaps having old connections and mm-hmm. having lived in the Rockland County for such a long time
mm-hmm.
and having been active in mm-hmm. Social kind of justice issues,
mm-hmm.
she pulled it out.
And what did she, like, was it a kind of thing where she was, did not have an expectation of winning and therefore just wanted to
raise
the issues? Or did she actually feel like she could, like, in her head, was she, like, in it to win it or?
I think she was in it to win it, but I think we all kind of knew it was a long shot.
Okay.
In the general election.
Okay.
Yeah.
But had she succeeded, what do you think her... Like, what was she running on? What was her platform? What did she want to do differently?
It was during the Reagan era.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, she was horrified by the violence in Central America, in mm-hmm. El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, so one issue was getting out of getting out of El Salvador.
Okay.
One issue was, certainly the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Then racial equality. Mm-hmm. She's always mm-hmm. a big proponent
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
Were
these areas that she could draw, like, a contrast to the guy who held the seat?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, one issue in the local area was, it had to do with private schools, and mm-hmm. especially... schools that were parochial schools and their funding.
Oh, I remember there was a New Yorker article about this recently about, did you read that?
No,
about,
I didn't.
There's some town, this is like an aside, but there's some town where Orthodox Jews basically have like taken over the public school system and it's...
Is it in Rockland?
Yeah, it is.
It's in
it is.
Yeah.
And it was some historical thing, which maybe goes back to this, actually. I got to find an article for it. It was really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look it up. That would be great.
Yeah.
And that was a big issue. And Gilman was very much allowing them to have whatever public funds or not pay taxes or I can't remember what the deal was. And they got out in droves and voted for him. Always. Mm-hmm. Always. Because, that was their
that's
issue.
Interesting. Oh, that's like totally related.
And the ironic thing is that when she died, the house ultimately was sold to a parochial Jewish school, or Orthodox school. Yeah.
Mm.
So they
is that what it is now?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's a girls' education.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Hmm.
Have you ever been back there?
I drove in the driveway once,
and
I saw that it was paved over to, blacktop to allow for people to park. So but beyond that, I haven't been back.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what was your role in the campaign?
Campaign.
Yeah.
Well, I took a leave of absence from my job.
Okay.
And I cannot remember, to tell you this, whether it was 84 or 86.
I feel like it was 86 and
88. 86 and 88. Okay,
yeah.
So I would have done that.
Because I have
86.
Some buttons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I took a leave, and we would go to radio broadcasts around the county.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I would drive her there and back.
Mm-hmm.
While she was interviewed,
mm-hmm.
sometimes there would be, I think, maybe once or twice a debate with Gilman
mm-hmm.
on air. And she would go to Democratic committee meetings in different counties, because
mm-hmm.
the district was Rockland, part of Putnam, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and part of Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about Putnam, but part of Sullivan.
Okay.
And also part of Westchester.
And that's changed, right? Because I think I read that if Chelsea Clinton were going to run, that would be the district.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, great. For Congress? She might run for Congress?
I don't I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? I think she'll probably run for something at some point. But I think did it always include Westchester?
Yes.
It did. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. I read that somewhere.
It was a part of Westchester called Greenburg.
Okay.
And it was really Greenburg that caused us to win.
Hmm.
And she networked with a woman who, all I can say, she was a civic leader in Greenburg. She was African-American. And I remember going to sort of projects with her and my mother and just sort of going door to door and introducing ourselves. And I think that is what won the primary that year, that canvassing. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And particularly in black neighborhoods or
No, all over.
All over. Okay.
Because it's in addition to the black neighborhoods, there are a lot of progressive white people in that area.
Because the person who holds it now is liberal, I'm pretty sure, right? It's not a Republican anymore in there. I don't think so.
Actually.
Okay. I actually think it's a black woman. I'm not sure about
really?
That. Yeah.
Oh, great.
I don't know, though. Yeah. I'll look that up, too. And then, so she ran, so I think if it was 86 and 88, and then she died in 91?
Yeah.
Do you think that she would have run again if she had lived longer, or was she done after that?
Yeah, I think she was done. After the 88 run, she was not going to do it again. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was she just tired of campaigning, or she lost interest in the idea, or...
I think it was probably tired of campaigning.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only imagine what it is like to campaign these days. Was it as, like, I mean, how did critical, you know, like, what did she have to deal with, like, a lot of criticism, you know, as part of the campaign process?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. People would say she was too old. I remember very distinctly one time, and Bo, my brother, uncle, will remember this too, that she was giving a speech and she began to cry because I think because she was stressed and it was a long campaign.
Yeah.
And she felt very strongly about the topic and she felt so mortified after that because she didn't feel that she should show emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I said, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Right. I don't think it's a bad thing at all to show how deeply you feel about this issue.
Yeah.
But, so there were a lot of slings and arrows at her.
And she also must have been one of very few women, I would imagine.
Yes. Louise Slaughter ran at the same time upstate.
Okay.
Upstate. And there was another woman whose name I don't remember who was also running at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that they both got in. Mm-hmm. And I think they were running for Senate, not Congress.
And for you personally, did it make you more or less interested in politics?
I would say less. I think if anything, less. Because we were dealing with a lot of the Democratic machine, and it was kind of an immovable object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't interested in adopting more radical or progressive ideas.
Hmm. So that hasn't changed.
Right. No, that has not changed.
So 30 years later, here we are.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, the interesting thing is I was never a political person.
We follow politics.
Yeah, I'm a news junkie now.
Yeah.
But, but my mother was always, from a very young age, very political, loved going to meetings, loved, trained as a lawyer, was always involved in social causes.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents met doing Russian war relief in Buffalo during the part of the war. Yeah.
Hmm.
And that's how they were both involved in that.
Hmm.
And, there's a famous letter from my father to his brother, Uncle Jim, saying that he'd met this great woman, but she was a real flaming radical.
And he was not.
He was more concerned.
He was more concerned, but, yeah. but still yeah. enough.
Enough to.
Enough to, yeah.
Go forward with That's the relationship.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was so much interesting stuff uncovered by the FBI file, which my dad acquired. You know about that?
No. Is this my mother's
FBI? Yes.
Oh, really? Was it all blotted out?
Oh, yeah. If you have not seen that.
Yeah. Next time.
Yeah.
Next time I'm up there.
Yeah, or he'll bring it down for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
I got it.
This is from the 80s, right?
No, it's from the 50s.
Yeah. No, I know about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so he...
Oh, because she went with...
to Russia, to China.
With
Owen Lattimore. So it was McCarthyism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they came and they, like, interviewed, like, the... post office, the local post office, to find out what kind of mail she was getting. They got her transcripts from all of her schools, and it's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, her famous story was that she was pregnant with Will, I think, who was born in 1950, and she was staying at her aunt's house, Aunt Caroline on Sutton Place. And she was desperate to see Caroline and Bo. And all of a sudden, these men showed up and asked her, you know, are you Eleanor? And we've just been to your home and we saw your children. And she was so excited. Oh, how are they? And then it emerged that they were FBI agents investigating her.
Oh, God.
So that was really awful. I know.
Wow. Okay, these are a couple of StoryCorps questions, so they're more general.
Okay.
But I like these questions, a couple of these questions. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
Well, my mother is a huge influence on my life.
Yeah.
And the other person is Leo Hurwitz.
Yeah. So I know almost nothing about him.
I'm sure. Yes.
Yeah. So
that's a whole other thing. But anyway, I can just tell you he was a Marxist and an independent filmmaker.
Okay.
Who was part in the 30s, he was part of a collective that made the first independent documentary films in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an FBI file way bigger than my mother's.
All right, interesting.
And,
so you were drawn to that.
Yeah, possibly.
Until the scientist with no run-ins with the law that we know of.
Yes.
I haven't. You might be a target at some point if I get good at this. So
that's who he is.
And how did you meet?
I was giving a poetry reading at my college, Kirkland College. Senior project. I was graduating.
But you were a poet as well?
I was a poet, yes. And so it was my senior project, and I was supposed to give a recitation of the poetry that I had written over the course of my time there. I majored in creative writing. And Leo was sitting in the front row. And he came up afterwards, and he said he really loved my poetry, and from there we ran into each other the next day at the office of the head of the department, and he said, you know, I'd love to meet for dinner sometime. And at that point I was at Buffalo,
okay,
so I was driving back there, but I was gonna, the semester would end soon, and then I would come back passing through that area, and so we had a dinner then. Yeah.
And so then that continued until he died. And when did he die?
He died also in 91. He died in January of 91.
Okay.
And my mother died in late August of 91.
So you never met Eleanor?
Yes.
Oh, no, I did.
He did.
And also Leo. Yeah.
But once. Only once, yeah. When he was very...
When did you meet?
Oh, when did we meet?
Yes.
Well, let's see. It would have been 89.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Charlie was my teacher.
Right.
In organic chemistry.
Yes.
And I took his class, and
yes.
after the class was over, he's going to say something for posterity. Here,
you came up to look at my palm.
Did I? I don't know anything about palm reading. I just wanted to hold your hand.
Well, you did that.
You convinced him you knew something about palm reading.
I guess so.
Do you remember what she said about your palm?
I don't.
Okay, yeah. So that was...
Yeah.
That would have been in 1990.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
After the class was over, right. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was right around the time Leo had been diagnosed with cancer.
I see,
And actually, Charlie's significant other at that point was also diagnosed with cancer.
Mm,
so we had this bond
which
both of our significant others were dying, really.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
So that's how we met. Yeah. But when you asked the two significant, or did you say
yes.
two? Yeah.
Well, this is one or two. You can
one or two.
Decide.
Yeah. The thing about both of them,
yeah.
both my mother
yes.
and Leo,
yeah.
is that they both had this social conscience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that they were trying to serve the larger community
mm-hmm.
and make the world a better
mm-hmm.
place. And
mm-hmm.
I really admired
mm-hmm.
that so much.
Mm-hmm.
Even it's not really what I can do. It's not what I've, but I've always felt, I've always admired it so
mm-hmm.
much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I help people, it's in a different way. It's on a one-on-one basis in therapy when
right.
people bring me their problems.
Which is part of the
which
larger.
But
yeah.
yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So, but marching and making films
mm.
to make
mm.
the world a better
mm.
place, or running
mm.
for Congress, these were things that I...
Mm. But going back to where we started with your charge and your true north,
uh-huh.
they're all interrelated things, aren't they, in a way? That you, tell me again, what because you were talking a bit...
Higher purpose?
Yes.
The highest purpose.
Yeah.
Writing, brothers and
yeah.
sisters, and caring for...
Yeah, right.
Caring for other people.
Right.
Caring for children.
Right,
yeah.
right. So in some ways that seems
yeah.
kind of related, that both your career path, but also the people that you find influential.
Yeah,
would,
in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Can you tell me one of your happiest memories? That's a hard one. I asked my mom this, and she gave me a really funny answer, which you can listen to on the... Apparently, it's really hard to do that on recall, but I'm just going to do it to you anyway.
Well, I have to tell you, it was... I was on the north rim of the Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm.
and I had... I was in an RV with my then boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and... we would, you know, go to sleep in this RV. The back of the RV had a window overhead,
mm.
so you could look up at the stars, and
mm.
the stars were fantastic because
mm.
there was no artificial light.
Mm.
And I just remember
mm.
that period.
The stars.
Yeah, and
mm.
we would go, we mm. drove around the whole Southwest in the RV.
When was this?
Oh, gosh. This was probably 87
mm.
or something
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah.
And you were just road tripping, or was like, did you have time off? Something like, were you on an academic calendar?
It was a vacation.
Okay.
Yeah.
yeah.
So that was a very happy memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you go back to the Grand Canyon?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
In
I've never
heartbeat.
Been there. Have you been there?
Yeah.
I've never been there. I mean, it's definitely like I know it's. Yeah.
You gotta go.
It's, yes. yeah. Yeah.
They're trying to commercialize it, right? They're trying
I don't, I guess. I mean, I think there's like some nicer places to stay now than there used to be, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Eric, when we moved from California, Eric drove across country, and so he went, but
But you didn't drive with him.
No, I didn't. I was like trying to save the company that was falling apart, which is why I had to go to Bhutan at the end of it, because I needed my,
to recover.
I needed to recover.
Wow.
What are you most proud of, personal or professional, or both?
I think I'm most proud of going to medical school.
Mm, yes, you should be.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I tell someone that I went to medical school at 38, I mean, it's like, that's, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm most proud of that. And becoming a doctor.
Yeah.
And becoming a working psychiatrist.
Yeah.
I think that's probably my most. Getting the medical education was a wonderful thing, and I will never regret that, because there's, you know, now I can read journal articles, I can understand what's going on. It's a great education to have. So that's probably my proudest accomplishment.
I'm sorry, it's telling me it's going to cut me off in a second. So I will ask you one more question.
Okay.
Just, what are you most grateful for?
Charlie.